Dateline Washington. Hello again from the nation's capital. I'm Greg Corumbus. In this edition, what's really inside that stimulus package? We'll talk about the price tag and a whole lot more with Bill Beach, director of the Center for Data Analysis at the Heritage Foundation. What does the price tag mean for future generations of Americans? And how is the Democratic Party actually trying to overhaul significant government policy when it comes to issues like welfare, health care, religious expression, and more? We'll get answers to those and many other questions with the help of Bill Beach. Also in this edition, all the House Republicans vote no. Again, we'll talk with Michigan Republican Congressman Thaddeus McCotter about why this package is completely unacceptable to the Republican conference and why he thinks their plan would be a whole lot better for much less of a price tag. Plus, figuring out a tragedy. We'll talk with David Field, the America's editor at Airline Business Magazine, about the clues that we have so far into the demise of Colgan Air Flight 3407 outside of Buffalo on Thursday night. And we will have some end-of-the-week fun with the Capitol Steps as they look at the doomed nomination of former Health and Human Services Secretary-designate Tom Daschle. All that, plus our top news at week's end, follows our discussion of what's inside the stimulus bill, and that begins right now. My first guest in this edition is Bill Beach, director of the Center for Data Analysis at the Heritage Foundation here in Washington. We want to get his thoughts on what's in, what's out, and what the provisions in the stimulus bill will actually accomplish now that it's become law upon the signature of President Obama. And Bill, thanks so much for being with us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you. Well, I wish we were talking on the occasion of a more favorable day, because this is a truly monumental and, as Speaker Pelosi says, transformational piece of legislation. It's filled with things that people should be attending to.
And let's talk about that, because I have the sneaking suspicion that you agree with her that it's transformational, but not necessarily in a good way.
You're guessing correctly again, Greg.
Let's start with the price tag. I don't know if that's the most significant part of this in your estimation, but it is down from both the original House and original Senate versions. The structure of the bill seems to be largely the same, 2/3 spending, 1/3 tax cuts.
Yes.
Better pill to swallow or just as bitter?
Well, the differences in the costs are in the hundreds of billions of dollars, which in normal circumstances would sound okay. But the total cost remains the largest spending bill in U.S. history. At $780 billion, in a single stroke of a pen, the president will obligate an entire generation, and maybe two, to repaying this bill. If you look at the cost, you have these direct outlays. That's the number I just mentioned, 780 or so. We don't know the final cost yet, because CBO will probably revise their estimates. And then we will be borrowing all of that money. That means that over the course of the next long period, let's just take 10 years, we'll be paying interest on the debt that we incurred to borrow the money. If you add the debt to the principal, as we should do as good business people and as just responsible citizens, then the cost exceeds $1 trillion. My guess is that there will be parts of this bill which will be permanent law. Major changes were made in welfare this time. We know basically in 1996 we changed our welfare system to a much better thing for low-income people. Well, we're reversing that entire trend. I don't think Congress is going to take that away. And the tax reductions, the tax relief, it's probably the case that that tax relief for low- and moderate-income families will stay in the books. If you do that, then over the next same 10 years, you're adding another $1.2 trillion in additional outlays or additional revenue reductions from forecast. So when you get the whole cost over a 10-year period, which is the basic funding window of the federal government, you're talking of a bill which started off at $780 billion in excess of $2.5 trillion.
Bill, let's talk a little bit about what you touched on there in a couple different places. And that's not just that a lot of taxpayer dollars, more than any other piece of legislation in history, are being spent here. And that, of course, adds to the debt. But the provisions of the bill radically alter the way the government functions in a number of ways. You mentioned welfare reform. Just how far does that, for example, get scaled back?
Well, it gets scaled back a lot. It's hard to know when a bill is written up what it will in fact be digested by the bureaucracy, because they can change things a lot. But if you just take the literal language, then states will be basically paid more welfare money by the federal government for increasing the number of people on welfare. not for decreasing the roles by getting those people to find jobs and to keep those jobs. That was the brilliant insight of 1996 and where President Clinton led us to a much better day for low-income Americans. Welfare was corroding their lives. Now it looks to me like the Congress is about to reverse that. On health care, everybody wants a better health care system. But this act actually moves us in the wrong direction. It gets to the point where more and more people will be on the Medicaid system, which was originally designed for low-income people. Now it'll be everybody, pretty much. And that will erode private insurance. Private insurance, oddly enough, is the way we ought to be going because it's the most cost-effective. Public insurance is very, very costly. Expansion in Medicare. Well, Medicare is already very badly damaged here, and we're damaging it some more. So there are a number of points from unemployment insurance to construction projects that I think move us in the wrong direction.
Bill, another thing I know that the Heritage Foundation is worried about, and your president, Ed Follner, talked about this in something that he wrote very recently, and that's that even some of the stipulations for, say, institutions of higher learning receiving some of this money, they've got hoops to jump through that could, at some extent, actually institute religious discrimination. Explain how that might work.
Well, there are provisions in the bill that prevent the recipient of these monies from teaching in a certain way, from essentially organizing their unit around a practice or a promotion of a religion. Now, my guess is that there will be some organizations which will simply refuse the money because the strings are just too suffocating. There will be others who will modify their behavior. But the point is that the federal government is making itself a present in these relatively and heretofore private relationships. I'm also disturbed by a change made in the conference committee that basically said the federal government will send money to a state even if the governor refuses it upon hearing from the state legislature that they would receive it. The state legislature would receive it, bypassing the administrative structures of state and essentially putting the federal government in the role of the executive office of state government. So it's a far-reaching, precedent-setting law, which is only getting a day of debate. Hardly anybody's read the 1,480 pages. It's just extraordinary.
Bill, there's obviously a difference of opinion on a number of these issues and, of course, the overall philosophy. You mentioned the states, and that's a big chunk of this bill, and I want to get you to follow up on that a little bit more. Some say the financial shortfall that they're facing right now is just a factor of a very difficult economy. Others say, look, what Congress is doing is rewarding the fiscally irresponsible. While it may vary a little bit from state to state, what's the general truth on that front?
Well, the general truth is that we have a very weak economy all across the country. It does vary in severity. Some parts are really, really badly affected, others not so much. But in everywhere, revenues are down and spending is up. Spending is up for these automatic reasons that unemployment insurance, the state program, and also state share of Medicaid's up. But there are many states, Greg, that went through the 2001 recession, had real emergencies because they had overspent prior to that, got bailed out in 2002 by the federal government, and did not take the lessons learned of 2001 and bring their states into a financial balance. Well, they're back at it once again. The same sort of list is in front of us, with a few exceptions, a few additions, a few drop-offs. It's weird to see it again. I mean, it's just like deja vu all over again. And here, the rewards for financial mismanagement are so much greater than they were in 2002. So it's a combination of a bad economy, but in the case of California and a few other states, really bad management since that last recession. And it's just unfortunate we're sending money to governors that are managing failed states.
So, Bill, now at this point, essentially the debate is over. For the typical family who may not pay that close of attention to Congressional Budget Office numbers and that sort of thing, how will they feel the impact of this in a positive or negative way, whether it's weeks, months, or years from now? How will they be able to determine exactly the effect that this particular legislation has had on them?
Well, for lower-income, middle-income families, there will be tax relief within 3 months if you're filing on a quarterly basis, or certainly by the end of the year. It's not going to amount for very much, so don't hold your breath. It won't pay all your bills. of course, the main thing is that people get jobs again. And that's where the plan is mainly focused, is the jobs plan. Now, that will happen if every one of the assumptions on spending comes true. We have serious questions about that, but let's just assume for a second that this plan does work. Then the principal benefits will be felt in 2010 and 2011. That's when most of the projects that are being funded here are supposed to be up and running, fully engaged, all the dirt's being moved for the highways, and all the roofs of the school buildings have got tar on them. So we're going to have to wait for a while. Will it lift our confidence? It just depends on how the markets receive this and how international governments see our ability to put our house in order. I tell you, Greg, I'm hoping for the best, because this is the only bite of this big apple we're going to get. If this doesn't push the right kind of buttons, I doubt that the next year we can come back with another stimulus plan.
About 60 seconds left with Bill Beach. Bill, you mentioned that the tax breaks for the typical families won't amount to much. We've heard one estimate that it amounts to about $13 a week, and they've ratcheted down now the breaks for individuals and married couples. What other tax provisions, real quickly, might do some good?
Well, there are a couple of provisions that will allow businesses to write off equipment and factories and things of that nature, buildings, that they purchased this year, as opposed to waiting until a year or two from now. And I think that's a good thing. Also, there's a provision that would allow companies to go back and take a look at their losses over the past couple of years, recession-related, and use those losses in calculating this year and next year's taxes. So it isn't without some merit. There are some things for small businesses and families, but it's too little, and I'm afraid it's going to be too slow to get out of Washington.
Bill, unfortunately, we need to call time there. Thank you, sir, as always, for your time.
Thank you, Greg.
Bill Beach is Director of the Center for Data Analysis at the Heritage Foundation here in Washington. This is Dateline Washington.